rainy weather and cooler temperatures have prevailed for the past few days, but fire season is by no means over. That's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition. Good evening, I'm Conrad Scheid.
And I'm Corin Cates-Kearney. We'll have updates on the cost of fighting those wildfires, and a Wyoming man says it was curiosity that led him to steal more than 500 pounds of explosives in Red Lodge.
The soaking rain that fell in parts of western Montana dramatically cooled temperatures yesterday and came as welcome respite from the heat and very dry conditions of the past few weeks. But fire officials cautioned the rain by no means qualifies as a season-ending event. Montana Department of Natural Resources and Conservation's Jordan Cobbin says the rainstorm that parked over the Missoula Valley yesterday was great to see.
However, with the conditions that we've had and all the heat and the dry days, all it'll take is probably... it could take up to 3 hours for things to dry right back out. Usually the rain only hits some of the canopy in the woods, so things on the ground are still dry, and we have to use extreme caution. Fire danger still have very high restrictions are still in place.
The public still must fully extinguish all campfires and approved fire rings, be careful with all ignition sources, such as dragging trailer chains and hot engines contacting dry, tall vegetation. The fire danger is still listed as very high across much of western Montana, but that might be bumped up to extreme in the coming days. One organization, the Missoula County Fire Protection Association, will meet soon to discuss that option.
MCFPA is going to get together on Monday morning. We'll probably discuss it. Just definitely depends on the conditions, and we put it all into an equation, and we talk about it, see how human behavior is. We've had a lot of human-caused fires over lightning fires. There's been more human-caused fires this year than lightning fires, which definitely concerns us, and if there's a possibility that we could bump it up to extreme, but at this point, I'm not really sure.
The Thompson River complex of wildfires remains at 1,500 acres. The West Alder Fire on the Missoula Ranger District in the Lolo National Forest stands at 82 acres with 25% containment. The Sear Gulch Fire burning in the Deep Creek area on the west side of the Clark Fork River stayed within its fire lines last night and is estimated at 48 acres with 15% containment. The National Weather Service says more wild weather could affect western Montana again this afternoon and evening.
Officials say the number of wildfires in Montana this year is above average, but the number of acres burned is well below the norm. Harold Gemmel with Northern Rock Equipment Center told the Governor's Drought and Water Supply Advisory Committee today that 19,400 acres burned so far is 20% of the annual average. More than $5 million of the $6.6 million total spent on firefighting has gone toward the Thompson River Complex fires, which started August 1st. The season started slowly due to cool and wet spring. Even with the low precipitation in July, Gemmel predicts the remainder of the fire season will be pretty much normal, with some gearing up in September.
Billings fire officials say a woman has died in the hospital after she was rescued from a fire that started in her home. Battalion Chief Terry Larson says the fire was reported at about 5 this morning. Firefighters forced their way into the home. A statement from the fire department says the fire damaged a bedroom and that there was smoke damage throughout the house. The Billings Gazette reports the woman died later at Billings Clinic. Neither her name nor the cause of death has been released.
In other news from around Montana, State Senator David Weisenried announced today that he will not seek the nomination for the Montana Democratic Party this weekend to run against U.S. Representative Steve Daines for the U.S. Senate. That leaves only two other heavily campaigning candidates, Dirk Adams and State Representative Amanda Curtis. Weisenried says it's clear to him that Curtis will get the nomination this weekend.
It's pretty clear that we have a front runner that's trying to win, I think, pretty handily. Most of the delegates I talk to feel a woman is better capable of drawing the distinctions between the values we represent and the priorities we represent to those of Steve Daines.
The longtime state lawmaker from Missoula also says his wife's recent health concern after an abnormal mammogram test affected his decision not to run.
Monday would be the first day of the campaign, and Monday is the first day of my taking care of my wife first and foremost. Once we find out whatever the results are, and I'm a cancer survivor myself, so hopefully it's not going to come to being anything anywhere near that serious, but we're prepared as a team to handle whatever gets thrown at us.
The Montana Democratic Party nomination convention will be held in Helena on August 16th.
Democratic U.S. House candidate John Lewis delivered meals and provided a little company today to homebound residents in the Clinton area just east of Missoula. Lewis participated in Missoula Aging Services' Meals on Wheels program, which provides a hot meal to homebound seniors and adults with disabilities in Missoula County. Lewis participated in a Meals on Wheels delivery day in Billings a few months ago and describes it as an eye-opening experience.
You get to talk to people at their homes, you get to talk to volunteers and just learn what's on people's minds. And I'm highlighting the fact that, you know, when you see budget cuts and what's called sequestration in Congress, that it's often seniors and kids and veterans that are paying the biggest price. And because of budget cuts, sequestration, between 4 million and 19 million less meals will be served in the Meals on Wheels program because of that. And that's not right.
Lewis says the Older Americans Act, the first federal initiative aimed at providing comprehensive services for older adults, should be reauthorized. He adds programs such as Meals on Wheels are a valuable investment.
Meals on Wheels is great because it allows or helps seniors stay in their homes so that they don't go to a home and need the services there. And it's a great service, and I look forward to seeing people in Missoula today.
Lewis recently authored a newspaper editorial in which he maintained that proposals to transfer public federal lands to state control are among the worst ideas he's heard.
It would be a major mistake. It would lead, because of the costs of firefighting, the cost to the state that the state would have to incur, we can't afford to do. And it would result in land being sold off to manage those lands. And so it's just a bad idea, and I'm trying to highlight that.
Lewis says he hopes President Obama tried to exhaust all other alternatives prior to deciding to bomb positions held by Islamic State insurgents in Iraq.
Well, something I hear consistently across Montana is that Montanans want to see us tackle a lot of the problems we have here at home first, before getting embroiled in another international conflict. I mean, obviously what's going on in Iraq is awful. It's become a breeding ground for terrorists, and America's security is our number one priority. But we also need to make sure that we are exhausting all means possible before we embroil in another war. Send people off to fight for this country again, and you go back to the VA. Let's make sure that we're keeping our promises to those that have already served before we send folks into another conflict.
Senator John Walsh was in Billings yesterday discussing Alzheimer's disease and the personal and financial havoc that can be wreaked on families and eventually public resources.
Veterans from the Great Falls area say Veterans Affairs staff in Montana is overworked and more options are needed for patients living in rural areas. About 20 veterans spoke with U.S. Senator John Tester yesterday at the University of Great Falls. The Great Falls Tribune reports most said they are happy with a medical center near Helena and a clinic in Great Falls, but doctors have too many patients. They told Tester more transportation options are needed for outreach to get veterans to their appointments. They also say technology should be improved to provide remote video options for rural patients to supplement VA health care. Tester says the work is not over after President Obama signed a bill last week to improve the Department of Veterans Affairs.
A Montana timber industry group is calling on the state's congressional delegation to stop litigation that has stalled logging on federal lands. Julia Altimus of the Montana Wood Products Association tells the Missoulian that lumber prices are good, but the problem is the supply. She says lawsuits against timber projects on federal lands have left the industry at least 60 million board feet capacity short of board feet capacity, and that mills are operating well below their capacity. Altimus says the industry employs 7,000 people in the state. That's down from the peak of 19,000 in the 1980s. The Alliance for the Wild Rockies has filed numerous lawsuits against U.S. Forest Service logging projects over environmental concerns. Its executive director, Mike Garrity, says the economy, not his group, is to blame for the industry's problems.
Two environmental groups are suing to block expansion of the Spring Creek coal mine in Montana. Northern Plains Resource Council and the Western Organization for Resource Councils filed the lawsuits today in federal court, naming Interior Secretary Sally Jewell and the U.S. Office of Surface Mining as defendants. The groups claim the Interior Department did not seek public input through an environmental review before approving the expansion. They also say Cloud Peak Energy has reclaimed very little of the land already distributed from its existing mining operations. The New Mexico-based Earth Wild Guardians also is suing to stop the Spring Creek mining. Attorney General Tim Fox has intervened in that lawsuit, saying blocking the mining would deprive the state of millions of dollars.
A Wyoming man says curiosity spurred him to steal more than 550 pounds of explosives from a U.S. Forest Service bunker near Red Lodge last year. 33-year-old Bud James Nessius of Wheatland offered that explanation in federal court today as he pleaded guilty to a single count of possession of stolen explosives. Appearing before District Judge Susan Waters, Nessius denied a prosecutor's assertion that he made at least one attempt to sell the explosives. Nessius admitted to stealing the explosives in April of 2013, taking them to his family's property in Wheatland and later convincing his brother to dispose of the material. Sentencing is set for December 4th. Nessius faces up to 10 years in prison, 3 years supervised release, and a $250,000 fine. He did not reach a plea deal.
Grizzly bears have been spotted along river drainages up to 35 miles away from the Rocky Mountain front, and state wildlife officials say prairie residents should take precautions. The Great Falls Tribune reports the bears are following ripe berry crops that are in the river bottoms east of the front. Grizzlies have been spotted in the Sun Teton Marius River drainages along the DuPere and Muddy Creeks. There have been no reports of conflicts with humans. In June, three bears killed two calves at a ranch 30 miles northeast of Great Falls. Mike Maddle of Fish and Wildlife and Parks says residents, farmers, fishermen should carry bear spray, secure food, and be cautious with grain spills around bins.
A federal judge has sentenced a 31-year-old Browning man to more than 14 years in prison for the 2012 beating death of a childhood friend. Today's sentence by U.S. District Judge Brian Morris comes after Victor Veal pleaded guilty in April to second-degree homicide in the death of 33-year-old David Josh Redhead. Prosecutors say the men were drinking and wrestling at a residence on October 6 of 2012 and went to an elementary school after being asked to leave the home. The Great Falls Tribune reports a surveillance camera captured Veal brutally beating Redhead on the school grounds. Prosecutors say Veal left Redhead, who stumbled to a nearby house and was later pronounced dead of a brain bleed. Prosecutors and Veal's public defender agreed the killing was reckless but unintentional.
Authorities say a 28-year-old woman died in a rollover crash near Pryor, but her 2-year-old son survived with minor injuries. The Billings Gazette reports Bighorn County coroner identified the woman as Nikki Dillon of Pryor, though she recently lived in Crow Agency. Montana Highway Patrol officials say she was driving east on Highway 91 when she veered off the road, overcorrected, and rolled down a steep embankment. It is not clear when the crash happened. Dillon was last seen on Tuesday night, and the vehicle was spotted Wednesday afternoon. Dillon was not wearing her seatbelt and was thrown from the vehicle. The boy was restrained in a child seat. KULR-TV reports the boy may have been strapped in the car for up to 19 hours before he was found.
Seatbelt use is the number one area of emphasis in the Montana Department of Transportation's Highway Safety Plan, and according to Supervisor of the State Highway Safety Section, Jeanette Kenny, over the past 10 years, 62% of crashes on Montana roads included individuals who were not wearing a seatbelt.
So that's a very high number, and if you look at the age group that we try to target, which is our 18 to 25-year-old drivers, the numbers are even worse. It's 71% of all fatalities were not wearing their seatbelt or wearing it incorrectly.
In Montana, drivers are required to wear a seatbelt, but it is a secondary law. That means police can only give a driver a ticket if they stopped the driver for a reason other than not wearing a seatbelt. In states with a primary seatbelt law, law enforcement can cite someone just for not buckling up. Montana Kids Count, a data collecting project housed in the Bureau of Business and Economic Research at the University of Montana, released a paper last week called Seatbelts: Saving Lives on Montana Roads. The publication, written by Daphne Herling, calls for passing of a primary seatbelt law in Montana. Montana Kids Count director Thali Dillon says Montana needs to change its approach by adopting strategies used by other states.
What we're doing now isn't working as well, and other states have shown that the effective approach is kind of a three-pronged way of doing things, starting with changing our seatbelt laws from secondary to primary, followed or accompanied by kind of a communications campaign, public education campaign with billboards and PSAs and the like to inform the public of why the law was changed and what consequences that has, and also visible enforcement of those laws.
The Montana Department of Transportation has set a goal of 90% seatbelt usage in the state by 2015. As of 2013, the state had a seatbelt usage rate of 79%. Kenny says educational campaigns stress the importance of wearing a seatbelt. And to reach that 90% goal, she says Montanans need to change their mindset when it comes to buckling up.
The underlying issue here is that we need to change the baseline culture in Montana. There seems to be an acceptance that it's okay to drive and not wear your seatbelt. It's taken for granted that people are going to die on our highways. We need that cultural shift to start with families and friends who make sure that everybody is buckled up for every trip.
Dylan says Montana's culture might add to the lack of seatbelt usage.
What we kind of think is the underlying reasoning is the kind of the Wild West last best place attitude that we have. Like, nobody's going to tell us to buckle up in our cars. But what people often forget is that it's not just about them. If a driver is not buckled but is hit from the side, he could be thrown and kill the passenger next to him, whether or not that passenger is buckled up.
The Buckle Up Montana government website says that no other traffic law change has the potential to save as many lives. It is estimated that the passage of a primary seatbelt law could save 20 to 30 lives each year. Kenny said that a primary seatbelt bill has been presented in Montana legislature, but it's never been put into law.
The forecast west of the divide tonight calls for rain showers with a chance of thunderstorms. Watch for heavy rainfall and frequent lightning later in the evening, with lows in the upper 40s and mid-50s. Friday expects similar weather with highs in the upper 70s to mid-80s. It'll be mostly cloudy in central and southwest Montana tonight, with thunderstorms in the early evening and again after midnight, with a chance of rain throughout the night, and lows in the upper 40s to mid-50s. Tomorrow will bring more clouds with scattered showers and thunderstorms, highs around 80 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Bree Gaudioso.
A gold flash of lightning struck the valley, and for just a moment, the sky was the richest hue of purple. The thunder surrounded me. In the most peculiar way, I was reminded of my childhood. Often I drove down Las Vegas Boulevard, seeing bright lights and flashes of gold. On the road in Montana, things are much different, though. That is the reason I decided to attend school here in the Big Sky State. Mackenzie, the young woman who was sitting beside me, felt the same. She and I took a road trip around the state of Montana as interns with AERO, the Alternative Energy Resource Organization. We are the interns for the Repower Montana Project, AERO's campaign to profile renewable energy success stories across the state. We spent a week traveling around the state, profiling different businesses, farms, homes, and other projects that use alternative and renewable energy technology or natural and sustainable building methods. Mackenzie, who also grew up in a big city, and myself, found ourselves drawn to Montana because of the state's ties to the outdoors. The relationships communities have fostered between themselves and their environment here are moving. Montana is wild and full of nature. It makes you feel like you are a part of Earth, rather than living in a cement block built up from the Earth. On our trip, we found that many Montanans feel the same way, and that is why they have chosen to call this place home. Many of them are doing great things to keep our beautiful state clean by cleaning up their sources of energy. Each place we visited was unique. Our first visit of the summer was to a quaint, off-the-grid cabin nestled in the hills near St. Ignatius. Lori Parr, a lavender farmer, purchased 20 acres with an inheritance she received where she now lives with her dog, spending her days farming lavender. While she relies solely on solar power, many places we visited installed alternative energy to complement their existing power source, such as the Butte Emergency Food Bank and the Saks Thrift Store in Bozeman. Each person had their own motive for installing alternative energy projects. For example, Edward Rowe, who lives in Manhattan, has a 4,000-watt rotating solar system along with a 500-watt wind turbine and a 2,400-watt hydroelectric system in his creek. His motive? Y2K. It was 1999, the millennium was right around the corner, and with speculation of permanent power outage, Rowe took it into his own hands to be more self-sufficient by installing his solar and hydroelectric systems. The year 2000 came and went with no major technological interruptions, but through Rowe's push towards sustainable energy, he set a wonderful precedent for the state. He was the first person in the state to use net metering. Net metering allows those who generate their own electricity from solar power to feed electricity they do not use back into the grid. Rowe, being the first person to start net metering, was uncertain of how the system would work or if it would work at all. Now, 14 years later, people all over the state are using net metering. It allows people to stay on the grid and earn credit for the extra energy they produce. However, there are limitations on how much one can sell back. For example, the consumer cannot have a system that generated more than 50 kilowatt hours, and energy credits only roll over for a 12-month period. At the end of the 12 months, the remaining energy credits are granted back to the utility company. We see the importance of protecting and advancing net metering laws in the upcoming legislative session to support increased use and innovation with alternative energy technologies. Our trip provided us with the opportunity to meet people from all different walks of life. Many people we met agreed that at first a different means of power seems complicated, but once you are familiar with the technology, it is actually quite simple. It was incredible to see such a diverse group of people all interested in sustainable practices. Farmers, businessmen, professors, government officials, public work officers, and your typical next-door neighbor all have found ways to green up their sources of energy. They've showed it's possible, agreed it's necessary, and are asking you to join the movement in cleaning and greening our beautiful state. I'm Bray Gaudioso for the Alternative Energy Resources Organization. AERO is a grassroots membership organization serving as Montana's hub for sustainable communities, inspiring change, connecting local leaders, and building capacity for success across the state for 40 years. If you'd like to get involved, visit us at www.aeromt.org. That's AEROMT.org.
Ray Gaudioso is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on the website. I'm Conrad Scheid.
And I'm Corin Cates Carney. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.